whole area that I would turn with you this morning, and my text this morning is particularly in chapter 24 and verse 44. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him. If you are to set out on a trip with maybe a few other folk, and you're all getting into the car, but then the phone rings just before you lock the door, and so you say, yes, I need to get the phone, and you get into hopefully a brief conversation. What do you say, let's say, to the children? You say, the trip's off, somebody's phone, we're not going. Well then, you just held back a bit. You don't usually just call it off like that. Maybe something desperate does happen, but generally speaking, you simply say, hang on a minute. Just hang in there. You delay, you don't cancel. Within this reading this morning, we read of Noah. Noah, we understand, spoke to the people around him. You remember this story. He was given a command to build a massive ship because there's going to be a flood. We are told that Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Everything points to him working on that ship, building it with his sons, having to explain himself, speaking to the people about what God had said to him, this world is going to be destroyed by a flood. That was told. It's going to happen. I'm getting ready for it. A little bit slower process than getting in a car and going on a trip today. But I'm doing it. I'm getting ready for something. But it didn't come yesterday, that flood. It doesn't come tomorrow. And so over a period of more than 100 years, let's put it like this, 36,500 days plus, he's waiting. It's a delay, but it does not equal a cancellation of God's word that the flood will not come. Just because it's 100 years delayed doesn't mean that it's not coming. And so we have Jesus in Matthew 24, in the first part of the chapter down to verse 36, telling us the things that will happen before the end comes. The clear implication is that the end will come. But I emphasized last week, it is indicated not yet. It's delayed, from our perspective at least, but that is not equal to a cancellation. And so he works on this particular point through to chapter 25 and verse 13. Giving the implications for us in this world. And I present it to you as watch and be ready. We read one verse where it says be ready. Several other verses very similar to this. He says instead of being ready, he says watch. These two belong together. Watch and be ready. Why should we watch and be ready? He tells us because there is a certain coming. I put it before you that there is also an uncertain coming. But the point being, the imperative, the command, the order, the instruction, the point is, be ready for his coming. Watch and be ready. There is a certain coming. It is an uncertain coming, but be ready for his coming. All there in chapter 24 and verse 44, you also be ready. And the reasons for it are given. For the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him. There is a certain coming. We deal with this first because every expression throughout this passage, from the moment back there in the beginning of chapter 24 when the disciples said, what are the signs of your coming and of the end of the age, everything is pointing to a certain coming again of the Son of Man, which was his name for himself. It rather points us and pushes us to understand that on this particular point, is he coming or is he not coming, that as far as Jesus is concerned, there is no dispute anticipated, no dispute possible. It's the underlying assumption through all that he says. What is said just here. It's almost as though you don't need to emphasize the Son of Man is coming. The Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him. There's something else to be emphasized. Be ready. It's the underlying assumption. And you see the evidence for it. Look in through this passage, these passages we read. Take verse 37. So also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Verse 39 is very similar, the same words. When the time comes. In verse 42, watch therefore you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. 44 we just read. 48 it's talking, using a parable. And what does the servant say? Not that my master is not coming back, my master is delayed in his coming. Delay is not a cancellation. In verse 50 as well of the same chapter, the master of that servant will come. Into chapter 25, verse 5, the bridegroom was, again, delayed. No dictionary will call that a cancellation. In verse 6, the same thing. The bridegroom is coming, was the cry when the time came. In verse 10 as well, the bridegroom came. This is a story intended to parallel, it's an allegory, a parable, the story of the world and humanity before God. And this is telling us that the time will come when the bridegroom will come. He's delayed, yes, but he came. And then beyond even this passage that we read into the next, starting up at verse 31 of chapter 25, when the Son of Man comes in his glory. Not if, but when. You see, it's the underlying assumption. It's through all of this. This will be happening. Don't make any mistake about it. One of the men who was sitting with Jesus on that mountain, hearing all of this, was Peter. And in his second letter, he writes, much later on, many years later, and he writes to those around him, in a few places in chapter 3 of his second letter. And he says, there will be a day that people will come, and they will say, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. They're saying, well, what's happening? There's nothing changing. It doesn't look as though we're moving into this great climax. Where is the promise of his coming? They're saying, just as that evil servant that Jesus spoke of, my master is delayed, I will do as I please. And then it goes on, and I just take up at verse 9 in that chapter. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness. I mentioned earlier, we talk about delay. That's my perspective. That's the way men see it, that it's not happening just yet. Why doesn't it happen? He's not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness. God has a purpose in all of this, in the timing of all of this. And so often, and Peter does it himself several times, he speaks of in due time. That's about the right time. that God has his plan all worked out and he's working accordingly. Everything he's doing, this promise, is intentional. And that's what Matthew 24 and 25 is also about. The underlying assumption is that the coming is certain. It will happen. But there is also an uncertainty to that coming. And in some ways, this is the leading aspect of his statement, "You do not, the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him." He is coming. That's implicit. It has, that's the foundation. But what he then wants to emphasize is that it will happen when you're not expecting, at an uncertain time. Back at the beginning of our reading, in verse 36 of chapter 24, "Of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven," and by implication not even himself in his human form, "but my Father only." No one knows about it or when it will happen. Only the Father in heaven. But you realize what that implies for us as well. To say no one knows and leave it at that means that no one knows. But here Jesus is saying there is one person who does know. It is not completely uncertain. It is uncertain to us, the human race, who would love to know, wouldn't we? But it's going to come when he's ready, at his appointed time. The Father does know. The Father has known, if we can use the past tense for him at this point. You see back in the prophet Habakkuk, you don't need to look back, it's the particular verses included with the order of service. The vision is yet for an appointed time. At the end it will speak and it will not lie. Though it tarries, you see, that's about delay, wait for it. Because it will surely come, it will not tarry. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some people, that's us, count slackness. Though it tarries, it will not tarry. It will not be truly delayed. It is an appointed time, and it is in the Father's knowledge. It is perfect. But the key point about this then is it will happen. The fact of it happening, the certainty of its coming, is never undermined by this. It is simply the certainty of the timing that is open to us, an open question. It's to everyone, other than the Father, that this timing is unknown. But see, it's a question of when, not if. And there's a vast difference there. And then so we see the pictures that are used. 24, 39. These people around Noah, it tells us they didn't know until the flood came and took them all away. So it will be when the Son of Man comes. Into verse 42. "Watch therefore, you do not know what hour your Lord is coming." 43. "If the master of the house had known, he would have prepared for the thief." In 44, we've read that already. In 48, if that evil servant says, "My master is delaying his coming." It's only a delay that he's talking about. As I said before, not a cancellation. 50, again, the same thing, that he will come on a day when he is not looking for him and at an hour that he is not aware of. Into chapter 25, other stories, other parables. While the virgins went up to meet the bridegroom, they were delayed. Verse 5. In verse 10, the bridegroom did come, but it was when they were not ready, when they were not in the place to meet up with him. They didn't know he was coming at that particular place. again into 13, the same repetition what Jesus had to say. Watch therefore, or be ready, for you know neither the day nor the hour when he is coming. And then also in verse 19, it was after a long time. Very vague, very general, very spread out, a long time. Then he came and settled accounts with them. The same with the first part of chapter 24. Very general descriptions, except for some parts that have to be applied to Jerusalem. Generally speaking, they're very general descriptions. It wasn't never going to be possible to pinpoint exactly when things were going to happen. And let me just say to you, if you ever come across people who suggest that they can pinpoint when Jesus is coming again, don't believe them. Don't believe them. Because Peter didn't know, who was right beside Jesus, and Jesus himself says, I don't know, before he left us. How can any man know if he doesn't? And don't believe them. Don't go with that. But do go with what he does say. He says, be ready for it. It is coming. You will never know when. I can't tell you when, and I will not tell you when, he says. But I will tell you something. You can be ready for it. And that's the last thing that I want to emphasize. And this is where Jesus is driving to. He's not just talking fanciful things. He's not just talking fine ideas, something that we would like to speculate on. He's saying there is something immensely practical that you must work at. Because it is coming, you don't know when it's coming, but you can be ready for it. That's what we have packaged there in verse 44 of chapter 24. But I remind you too, it's there in verse 42, it's there in verse 50, it's also there in chapter 25 and verse 13, as well as the whole thrust of the stories that he tells. Ready for his coming. But this also needs a question mark. Are you ready? And are those around you ready? First, think of Noah. That's what Jesus deals with first. Why does he pick up on Noah there? Why does he use Noah as an example? Well, first of all, for most of humanity, apart from Noah and his family, for the rest of humanity, the end was coming in that flood. That event around Noah is the only event in human history that can compare in any way at all with what Jesus is talking about here. That's the first thing that we can recognize. But the other thing we can recognize is what Jesus himself says about that time. It's the character of the time. What does it look like? What was it like in the days of Noah? Because he says it will be just like that in the days when the Son of Man comes. Verse 38 of chapter 24. In the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking. Do you eat and drink? Most days, don't you? They were marrying and giving in marriage. Well, you might not do that personally, but you know people who do. It happens every day of life. Really rather ordinary things. Perhaps picking up on marriage because it's a long-term commitment, or at least it should be. And especially in those days, of course, people lived for 900 years, most of them, as far as we know. But ordinary things, level things, things that happen around you every day of life, things that you do every day of life. For all outward appearances, things are pretty reasonable. What's wrong with eating and drinking? God made us to eat and drink. What's wrong with marrying and giving in marriage? God made us to be married, to have families. That's how we were made. What's the problem then? Why were they destroyed? You look back to Genesis chapter 6, and it tells us there, for all those outward appearances of normality and ordinariness, the thoughts of man's heart were only evil all the day. You can do all of these things, It's a veneer on a piece of chipboard, piece of formica. Looks beautiful. What's inside? Doesn't stand up to scrutiny. Thank God could see that. The heart of man was evil. At his heart, man had lost time for God. Deliberately lost it, just discarded time for God. So how careful we must be that we don't do that. It was all about personal interests. Yes, God made us for eating and drinking, giving in marriage, marrying, such things. There's no mention here of the problems of sexual debauchery and murderings. Where was the problem? These people, in all that normality, were just unready to deal with God and God's interests. Look at verse 39. They did not know until the flood came and took them. Jesus knows what he's talking about. But yet, if you look back at the story, for over 100 years, this massive ship was being built right in the middle of them. They'd never seen a ship before, it seems. They would be wondering what's going on. Noah would tell them he was a preacher of righteousness, Peter tells us. Over 100 years. And they didn't know. Something had to be happening. Why was he doing this? They would go about mocking him. They saw it. How did they not know that Jesus tells us they didn't know? Noah knew. Did he not tell them? The Bible seems to show that he did tell them. How did they not know? Do you see the question? It's because they didn't want to know. We all do it. It's part of sinful nature. And the truth is set before us. Do you accept it all the time? They didn't know. Because they didn't take in what they'd been told. In the book of Revelation, several churches are spoken to, and at the conclusion of each of these addresses, the words are given, "He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Just because you've got ears doesn't mean you're hearing. Just because the message is told doesn't mean you know. You have something to do to take it in. There's more that Jesus says about this. Immediately from there, he says, that's what it's going to be like when the Son of Man comes. That could fit perfectly today. So too to the following thing that he goes on to straight away. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left, and another one is very similar to that woman grinding at the mill. Working side by side, doing ordinary things. It's good for you to be out there in your businesses and so on, doing those things that others do. There's no problem with that. Ordinary things. But one will be taken. And that word actually, in that context, depicts somebody who's taken to be with another. And that's what Jesus has referred to elsewhere. I will take you to be with myself. He will send his angels in verse 31. They will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Take them to be with him. That's what this taking is about. But the interest is not in where they will be taken to. That's not an issue at the moment. The interest is in the division. The distinction between them. One will be taken, and this is all right. This is the way it should be. And the other will be left for whatever, discarded. Outwardly, things seem to be the same. But there must be something different so that one will be taken. It's about the state of readiness of heart. Verse 42 follows it. Watch, therefore, be ready. You don't know when he's coming. Never forget God's angels came when Jesus was born and said, peace on earth. Yet Jesus was able to say in Luke chapter 12:51, he says, do you suppose that I came to give peace on earth? I tell you, not at all, but rather division. There's been no one in all of history so divisive as Jesus. There is one or the other. You love him or you hate him. That's what we find today. When you proclaim this true, simple gospel message, it is a savor of life to some, death to others. He says, I came to bring division. That's what this is talking about. There will be two who look identical, doing the same thing, but there is something in their heart that makes all the difference. How do they think of Jesus? It's interesting in that passage in Luke 12 that I just quoted. Some of these same stories, parables, are being told. And Peter asks the question, is this just for us, the disciples around you, or is it for all people? And the answer is, much as I mentioned from Revelation, he who has ears, Jesus implies, let him hear. Listen in. Take this in. All people need to hear it. And so he tells these parables, the ones that we have read here this morning. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them. Some of them are worth spending more time on. We may be able to do that another time. But to get the big picture, what Jesus is pointing at with all of them, and really they're so straightforward. They're drawn from life. The reason he tells them like this is because you should be able to see the sense in these things. There's the thief. Of course his timing is unexpected. What do? You make certain preparations for it. You can be out of the house now. You've got an alarm. You put it on to make some precautions, whatever it might be. That's one story he tells. It's so obvious. These things will happen. It's just going to be like that. Unexpected, but it can well happen. In this case, it will happen. An example from today. You're at work, the boss has to go out, he leaves you with a job to do. Question, what will he come back to? When he comes back, you don't know when he's going to come back. His meeting could last, meetings do last a whole day. When does he come back? Will you have your heads down? Will you be showing initiative? Maybe you've done the job that he gives. Will you be moving on to something else that will be for benefit? Or are you rather sitting there with your feet up on the desk, you're chatting, you're drinking coffee, using the phone to Australia? That's today's parallel. Is that appropriate? You don't know when he's coming, but the boss is coming back. The master. There's there is an interesting part in Luke 12, the parallel passage. One point, Jesus says, there are some who will not know, but there are some who don't know, but they should have. Yet there is a comfort for those who genuinely don't know about these things. Yet we read of these things. The moment you read them, the moment you hear the words, you have more responsibility to respond appropriately. There is one who ought to understand, and that's you, because you've heard these words. In this passage, several times, Jesus tells us what it's going to be like. In this passage, several times, he tells us that there will be blessing and there will be punishment. For some of these servants, there will be honor, great honor. Make him ruler over his goods, because he's behaved himself and done what he was asked. The contrast is that there is an evil servant. He'll be cut in two. He'll be given his portion with the hypocrites. There, where the hypocrites and these sinners are, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Jesus uses these words because he's distressed by this, I believe. I don't think Jesus enjoys this any more than I do. To remind you that this is the reality, what is going to happen. not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. But Jesus is telling us because he wants people to listen. He wants you to know the reality. What are the real choices before you? It's not a threat that if you don't do what he likes, you'll mess things up for you. This is the reality. The moment you sin, the moment you transgress the word of God, you will die. That's built into our whole creation. And it is distressing to think that those decent people, looking just like you, working in the field right beside you, working at the mill right beside you, working at the desk right beside you, there are some of them will be left if they don't listen. In any of these parables, there are two parties. There is one, like Noah, for example, who chooses to be ready. What does strike me here is that you do have influence, it seems. Look at the 10 virgins. There were 5 who were wise, not just one. Perhaps one encouraged the others. We don't need to go too far into that. But there is something about that in all of these things. For you to realize you can be that man working in the field, working in your office, and there's a man beside you who looks identical, dresses just like you, speaks the same words, does the same job. If Jesus comes tomorrow, yes, let's put it that way, will he be left as you were taken? Or in part of your getting ready, can you prepare him too? Can you take this word to him and say, look, this is going to happen. Are you ready? Be ready, Jesus said. He's told us all of what's going to happen that we need to know. And he's telling us, be ready. But do you also see there are 5 and there are not 10 virgins? Companionship on the outside is not enough. It's got to go further. Just assuming the other one is ready. Or on the other side, the foolish virgins assuming that they could just borrow some oil without bothering to prepare themselves. But for us, by and large, maybe there is someone here who still needs to say, I'm not ready. I need to get ready. What can I do to get ready? By and large, you may be ready yourself. Recognize the opportunities you have to urge others to get ready and go with you, with him. I wonder if it's dads who do this more than others. Some people would say it might be, and it's a throwback to our beginnings. To anticipate danger, to anticipate looking ahead to possible consequences of actions. You see the kid walking along the wall and you know what pain is like. And you say, well, just be careful. This is a father who's telling us, speaking to us, God the Father. He says, I'm sending my son back. Are you ready for it? If you're not, there's great danger. And when this father appears, I'm a dad. Maybe other dads manage it, maybe you don't. But if something is happening in a room in the house and I open the door, it's all I need to do sometimes because of what's happening. You know what I mean? What is happening stops dead. Color rises to the faces. Forgive me, boys. But you're not the only ones. There are other children here who behave exactly the same way. There are grown-up children here who always did behave the same way, didn't we? When this father appears at the door, what are you going to be stopping dead at? In sheer embarrassment. Are you ready for that your father appearing at the door? Will you be pleased to see him? Remember that none of these things just happen to any of us. They don't just happen around us and apply to us. You and I are active agents with responsibilities, things that we need to do to be ready. but I need to draw this to a close. Forgive me. And I do so by drawing your attention very quickly to the last parable, known as the parable of the talents. And the reason I do this is because, and the reason that we read it and read it separately is because it is slightly different. And the difference is that there is some indication here of how we should be thinking in order to be ready. You see, we're told to watch and be ready. And the last one we read of those was in verse 13, just before this story. So let's look just very quickly at what he says here about being ready, and then we close. There's a story of the master who gives talents. A wealthy man. A talent was money that was referred to here. We've used it for a lot more than that. And rightly so. It is suitable. But the question is, what are you going to do with what he gives you? Do you notice in a couple of places, Jesus said, there is one who has something, and to him will be given more. There is one who doesn't have, and that will be taken, even that will be taken from him. That seems to be illogical. I think what he's saying here is, every human being who has ever lived, yes, even the poorest, has been touched by God's grace in some way. The question is what you do with that grace. But what you do with that grace is not the means of your entering the kingdom. It is the outpouring of the heart that is ready to enter the kingdom. Yes, the accounts will be taken. It will be said, what have you done with this? But that is the pointer, it is the indication of where your heart lies. Does it rest with him or not? What will you do with it? This makes a difference at the end. And you see in this story that it depends on the knowledge of the master. That comes out most vividly with the third man who knew him in one way. The first two said, this master, maybe they thought the same thing, but they said, this master is worth taking the risk for. They took a risk. They invested those 5 talents, those 2 talents. But look at the result. But they took a risk. Because they trusted in him. They believed in him. They gave their energy to him. They worked to raise return on the investment. How many around us treat our God as a hard master and therefore don't want to respond to him? How do you view him? Look at the pleasure he took with the two who committed themselves to his interests. God does take pleasure. He's not a hard master. But will you serve him in his interests? And so to all, these passages tell us there's a wide open opportunity to hear from God himself. Well done. Don't you want to hear that? How are you dealing with life? What he's given you in life? Are you doing it for him? And he will say, well done. And he will say, enter into the joy of your Lord. It's got to be worth it. When he comes. But you must seize it now. Just as in the days of Noah. Our days are just like it. Thing is, you do know. It cannot be said of you. They did not know, and so they couldn't enter in. You do know Jesus is coming. You know that Jesus will come when the time is just right. Will you watch and be ready for that? You know, even that's not enough. You won't. If you're not already, are you watching? Are you ready for a certain coming? Watch and be ready, he says. What a great Savior we have who has told us this. Let us turn to him. Let us pray to him.